So how is everybody tonight? We're good. So, as promised, we're going to go through a little contemplative. I'm going to lead you on a little contemplative implementation of the Four Opponent Powers. So I'm going to try not to elaborate too much. I want to keep it really simple because my hope is that you'll be able to, just on the basis of knowing the Four Opponent Powers, take yourself through the Four Opponent Powers whenever, if ever, you feel the need arise. Some people like to do the Four Opponent Powers, just a quick little check-in with the Four Opponent Powers, in the evening every day as part of their end-of-the-day practice. It adds a little structure for reviewing your day. Is there anything I'm uncomfortable with today, particularly, that I'd like to review? And it adds a real framework of mind. If you do it on a daily basis, it adds a real framework of mindfulness and awareness of your actions. That just the very process of engaging in that practice every evening, during the day, you're like, oh yeah, that's one for this evening. So it feeds back into your day, and it increases your mindfulness, because of course, as we've said, part of the practice is to know what the negative actions are, but the second part is the mindfulness, to even be aware of your actions, even of body and speech. Even being aware of your actions of speech is, a real mindfulness practice, because, we engage in a lot of talking. And of course, that's one of, and Venerable Dhammadina did refer to that, that's one of the good reasons for using your speech wisely because the more you engage in it, of course, the more likely you are to be unskillful in speech. So more volume, more frequency, more opportunity for mistake. But that said, as somebody said, it's cultural. You said it was cultural. Speech is a little bit of a cultural thing. Somebody wrote me a note and told me they were Irish Catholic also. So, if you were brought up Irish Catholic, it's not an option to be quiet. Yeah. Although there are Dharma centers in Ireland, I wonder about them.
Oh, I grew up Irish Catholic in a house that was very quiet.
Really?
And full of music.
Oh, music. Oh, ha, ha. Oh, ha,
ha. Yeah. Quiet.
Huh. Okay, well, anyway.
Just to let you know, there are some of
them. Yes, there are.
And don't talk about it.
Yes. Yes. That's right. Okay. So, before we get too involved, because also I wanted to wind up a few other things, but if I get launched, then we're going to launch. So let's do a little meditation and stop talking so much. So I think maybe we'll do just a few minutes of mindfulness meditation, and then I won't ring the bell. I'll just begin to lead us in the contemplation. So now, bring to mind one or several negative actions and motivations you've engaged in, or emotional states that you'd like to work with tonight. These can be specific actions that trouble you. They can be recent, they can be today's mistakes, last week's, they can be from the more distant past. They could be chronic negative mental states such as doubt or depression, anxiety, anger, sadness, loneliness. So first, considering whatever you're working with, generate that sense of regret for these actions or mental states. And we do this by honestly acknowledging their harmfulness for ourselves or others. We drop the rationalizations, the excuses, the denial. It's just acknowledging the harm or the potential harm in the same way we would regret having touched a hot stove burner. And so if it's a mental state, think my, for example, anger is harming me. It's making me and others unhappy. Just acknowledging that. The harm isn't caused by what I'm angry about or what I've lost. The harm is caused by the anger itself. This is a brave, honest Dharma mind full of the support of wisdom and compassion for yourself. So secondly then, we want to repair our commitments. The commitments to ourselves and others that have been damaged. And we do this by mentally transforming our attitudes towards those that we've harmed, including ourselves. So generate metta, the wish that others and yourself be happy. May I be happy and free of suffering. May others be happy and free of suffering. And then we repair our commitments to ourselves. And we generate a sense of refuge in the values and ideals that are important to us, but that our actions have somehow diminished. And then third, naturally following upon that reestablishment of your commitments to yourself, to others, and your regret, naturally follows some resolve. A resolve regarding this sort of harm in the future for some specific amount of time, an hour, a day, the rest of your life. His Holiness says, be brave. Aim high. If you're working with an intractable emotional state, your resolve might be simply to be aware of its arisal. To be particularly aware of its arisal, to be be aware of its arising, its changeful nature, and its dissolution. And to not get so involved with it when it arises, not to take it personally. Fourth and finally, think of some remedial activity you can do that will balance the energy of that negativity with a greater positive energy. You can be creative. If you can make the activity match the negativity, that's all the better. This could be some generosity, some generous help for a neighbor or acquaintance. It could be volunteer activity. It could be particular meditation practice. It could be the generation of metta. It could be the reading of a Dharma book on an appropriate topic, or the attendance on a retreat on an appropriate topic. Or attendance on a teaching. So decide what that looks like. And this activity it's not penance. This activity will make you happy. Of course, if you're able to actually correct a harm or compensate for the harm, resolve to do that. If it's possible. Perhaps there's someone that you need to apologize to, if that's appropriate. If it's appropriate, resolve to do so. If it's not possible or not appropriate, resolve to keep that harmed individual in your dedications and as an object of your metta, your loving kindness. So then feel that you have purified all negative imprints and released all guilt. And you may or may not have like the warmth of feeling that, but even artificially, allow that sense to arise and kindle that little flame of release. Let yourself feel psychologically and spiritually cleansed so that you can go on with your life with a new start, with a fresh attitude. In a completely newly arising moment. I'll ask you for any comments or questions or clarifications in a minute, but I was thinking of this, the resolve and the time period issue. And of course, with, deeply entrenched habits of speech or mostly habits of speech and mind, it's difficult to choose that time frame, and especially if it's an intractable mental state. And But I was thinking how when I was much younger, and I first began leading wilderness trips. I was really young. I was 28 when I first started. And I led them for a year up in the Pacific Northwest. And then the second year, I led a trip in Baja. So I had done one trip in Mexico prior to that. And then I came home. I mean, I was 28. I came home and wrote up a brochure and advertised my trip for the next year. Anyway, as I got closer and closer to that trip with people that I didn't know that had signed up for this trip, I had a lot of anxiety. Perhaps a little belatedly. But it was really oppressive, as all of you know, who suffer from occasional or more frequent anxiety. And I discovered, though, as I got closer and I thought, I have to sleep, I would make a deal with myself in the evening that after 6 p.m. I didn't think about it. But the key was that I was allowed to think about it and worry about it and plan the next morning after I'd had my coffee and woke up. Yeah? So it wasn't like I was saying, no, I cannot do this anymore. You know, because if you say, don't be anxious, I mean, that's just like throwing kerosene on the fire. But I just discovered if I had that, the deal with myself, that sure, I can go ahead and ruminate and worry and think about things the next morning, then I could quit at 6 and say, and if something would pop up into my mind, I would think, oh, that's okay, I can worry about that tomorrow. Anyway, but discovering that I could actually put it down made me realize I had a lot of control, a lot more control over that anxiety than I thought I had. Anyway, just to say that it's worth experimenting with, you know, breaks where, even if it's an intractable mental state, that you really do give yourself a really serious time out with permission to start right back up and enjoy your suffering later. And that permission to get right back in it again is kind of a freeing thing, you see. So I just invite you to experiment with that when you are setting your, you know, your time frame for how long you're willing to, or, you know, you're going to try. Anyway, so that's part of the rationale for saying, remember, it's a training. So that's part of the rationale for making a period of time. So, now, I mean, this is part of, who was saying the 8-step, or the 12-step? The 12-step, where you, one day at a time, if you make, you know, it's similar to that. So if you are a habitual gossiper, or then to say, okay, one, you know, today, the rest of the afternoon, or tomorrow, then you have there's the training that you do have more control over it than you think you do. Or maybe it's even just an hour. You know, if it's a mental state, it could be a half an hour. But that gives us, we learn something from that. We learn we can take half hour breaks anytime we want to, which is incredibly useful and, you know, very serious wisdom insight into the nature of the mental states. Okay. So a few, I had a quote I wanted to read you from Shantideva. Do people know Shantideva? People do know Shantideva. Okay. Shantideva's Patience Chapter. This is one of His Holiness's favorite texts. And in fact, a long time ago, like 20 or 30 years ago, they were doing the first 3-year retreat somewhere up in the Northeast. And I know somebody that was on that retreat. And it was so special that in America they were doing a 3-year retreat that His Holiness was visiting and came to meet the retreatants. And so there he was up in this farmhouse with no heat, and they'd been there for like a year and a half. And he drives up his entourage drives up the long driveway. And then they park, and there everybody's looking out the window. He comes in, and he talks to them, and oh, they're all so exciting. And then he turns around and leaves, and they start walking down they walk far down the road to get to the car that they had parked at. And they're all, their faces are glued to the glass, watching him go, as you can imagine. And then all of a sudden, he turns around and starts running full speed back, running full speed back to the house, and all of his security people and his entourage, they're all like, ah! And they turn around and they're all running after him. So you've got His Holiness in the lead, running towards the house, and all the guys, and at that time, a lot of the security guys were Kadampa Tibetans, and they were like wearing their Tibetan, long shirts, and you've got all them, now they wear, their men in black suits. But they used to wear their whole Kampa regalia. So they're all running up with His Holiness and leading. He gets back to the door breathless. He comes charging in the door and he says, "The patience chapter." "I forgot to tell you about the patience chapter." You have to study the patience chapter. You have to read Shantideva's patience chapter, which has almost every antidote imaginable for anger, irritation, and aversion. And some that aren't even imaginable. Anyway, it's great brilliance. So here we have verse 45 from Shantideva's patience chapter. "So confused, I don't want suffering. But I crave its causes." Why blame someone else when my own mistakes have caused my trouble? Yes. Okay, so few other things that I was thinking of this morning as the Venerable was talking. First of all, shoes. Once I bought a used kayak from a sergeant in the Air Force who had been on the plane that flew Imelda Marcos's shoes out of the Philippines when they left the Philippines. It was one whole cargo transport.
And then the next one was from my mother's shoes.
So, closet, that's small potatoes. Yes. I'll bet she did. Who even knew they made that many shoes on this planet?
It's so stressful to manage all of them.
But she had people for that, I'm sure.
She probably
bought a new pair. She probably never wore the same pair twice. She probably would never wear the same pair twice.
She had 3,000 pairs of shoes. That would be,
I don't know how many thousands there were. There were, the plane was full of her shoes. Anyway, that wasn't really the important thing that I had to say, but just to say how, greed and covetousness, painful. Just imagine how painful that is. And it's not just things. That was the thing I really wanted to say. Like, most of us don't so much crave a closet full of shoes. We're Dharma practitioners. We probably, not so much. And stuff, we like our stuff, and we don't want to lose it. But, and we do like to do shopping therapy, yeah. But we're not passionate. But if you think about other things like experiences like travel, and vacations and going here and there and doing this cool thing and doing that cool thing and the culture of accumulating experiences. So we can be dissatisfied and restless for experiences and novelty and not just material things. So when we're talking about the craving mind, we're not just meaning, you know, new software for the computer or, you know, a really cool vacuum cleaner. Yeah. Okay, and then another thing I was going to say about the rejoicing danger in terms of ill will and how easy it is to generate ill will in a kind of a passive setting. Particularly, I wanted to point out in terms of consuming news. You know, if you aren't very mindful when you watch news, it's very easy to fall into, you know, rejoicing in the downfall of the bad guy. And we did have a discussion about, well, what do you do when, you know, there is some harm that needs to be stopped? Well, you can rejoice that a harm has been stopped, you see. That some harm has been stopped, yeah, without turning the person into the evil person who deserves punishment and deserves their suffering, yeah. So that includes politicians. You can think, good that this person lost the election because, you know, you have the belief that it's better for people. Maybe some harm was done, that now that harm will be stopped. Probably not, if you're realistic. But, you know, you think better chance. But, you know, we don't have to extend, you know, hatred to that person. And of course, this is a reflection of our understanding of emptiness, because we understand there isn't a bad and there isn't a good person, some inherently fixed nature of a person that is good or is bad. There are actions. We're all full of a whole big mix of actions, some of which, you know, and they're just arising in the moment. We're just full of a whole array of positive and negative mental states. We engage in all kinds of different actions, and the bad guys and the good guys are no different. You know, their mothers love them. They are nice to their dogs. They engage in acts of generosity as well as doing harmful things. Just like us.
That he makes about his art, mm-hmm. and he's painting, and I like to paint. And
oh no, he's wrecking it for you.
It's like, oh yeah, I really get that.
Oh, I see. You're being forced to see him as more human, and more multifaceted. Oh, he's your teacher. He's your teacher. That's right. Yes, that's right. Yeah, treasure that. When you make contact with the dearness of the enemy and see the positive qualities of the enemy and relate to the sameness, your sameness with the enemy, wow, that's a beautiful, beautiful and precious moment. That, capitalize on that. That's huge. Because the whole ability to divide people into us and them and to create enemies relies on only seeing a narrow little slice of what they're about. You know, you don't want to see them with their mother. You don't want to see them with their dog. You don't want to see them painting. You don't want to see them kneeling down by their bed at night praying for people. You want to just think that they're bad, because then you know how to relate to them. Then life is so easy when there's good guys and bad guys. Okay, what else was I going to talk about here? A little comment on the... before I do the nihilism comment, I wanted to answer the question. So there is some... The Dharma does talk about, you know, when we take rebirth, that there's a... And you could say there's a kind of way in which we choose our parents. And that's... traditionally, that is said, that we choose our parents, that there's some attraction there. You know, there's some attraction. You know, I haven't done it lately, so, and I can't remember. So I'm afraid I can't really tell you from personal experience how this functions. But I do understand that the subtle mind that is, it's being powered by its karma. You know, the karma, our karmic habits, our karmic attractions and propensities will make us attracted in the moment. I mean, it's also a very momentary thing. If one were to die one day as opposed to another day, different conditions would arise. So that once again, you have conditions are part of that ripening. So you've got the karma that ripens, but you've also got the whole array of conditions. So it's very complex. So I think aside from I think not get too caught up in, I mean, you know, it kind of depends. If you're not so wild about your parents, some of us might think, oh, how could I possibly have, did I really choose them? On the other hand, we might really appreciate our parents. It's a ripening of karma full of conditions. And once again, karma is a machine. It's not a fairness principle. It's not a justice principle. It is like gravity and the falling of the apple to the earth. I personally, I have to say, if I say what I personally think about it, I feel like there's a certain kind of, I think one is attracted to what one is familiar with. And also they say that loving kindness is the, where you might say attraction to human beings is the factor that is very energizing in our choosing a human rebirth. Yeah, so that's why karma matters with our rebirth, because karma is about harming human beings. Yes, so if we cultivate a mind of loving kindness, then, of course, in the rebirth process, then we're attracted, because we're attracted, we have a kindness, we have an attraction for human beings. There's a kindness, a sense of the dearness of human beings, so that we naturally are attracted to human beings. And that's all I'll say on that, because there's not so far we can go with how... The Tibetans will go on and on about the rebirth process and tell you exactly how it happens.
Seems that the word choice, though, is kind of problematic for me.
It's not exactly choice. Yeah. Choice wouldn't be the right word.
It's like, you're really fully developed consciousness going, I'm going there.
No. I don't, by choice, I don't mean, I want this one and not that one. Uh-huh. When I say attraction, mm-hmm. I'm talking about we are attracted to our rebirth. We're attracted to our rebirth. That's the thing. We're attracted to our rebirth.
And rebirth is led by our
karma. Yeah, the attraction is what we've familiarized with, and our whole karmic habits, and yeah. anyway, don't get too caught up in that, because that's a very conceptual kind of way of talking about something that is very difficult and to talk about. And that part is not really so, so very important. Okay, so one other thing I wanted to talk about is nihilism, when we talked about wrong view. I just wanted to say about this kind of mind that is made up and very actively in denial of things about which one doesn't really know so very much. And that agnosticism, or not knowing, or doubt, is a more, there's more wisdom in that, unless you really do know. And most of the things we doubt about, we don't really know. Yeah. So to fix on something, the problem with the cynicism that fixes in a very definite mind, this is not true, I don't believe this, this is wrong, very, very, in a cynical kind of way. The problem with that mind is it's closed. So this is a really, this is a huge karmic action that doesn't admit of any development, you see. So it's very dangerous mind, because it's cut, it's closed. There's no possibility for learning. You see, there's no possibility for learning. There's no possibility. Doubt is a perfectly fertile mind. Doubt is full of potential for developing, deepening, growing, discerning, investigating. In fact, it's considered a positive quality for a Dharma practitioner to have doubt. Yeah? In some settings, of course. Some doubt debilitates us. But there's a kind of healthy doubt about the things that we're not sure about, and that compels us to investigate and to, you know, research in our own lives and in our Dharma environment. So doubt is a great, is perfectly acceptable. But the closed mind, you see, it's not, there's no openness. It won't grow. It can't grow. And the cynicism tends to arise as part of a kind of an identity, you know, like I'm smart and trendy because I'm, you know, I don't believe in all that stuff. And there is kind of a little force of anger. You can tell it comes with, you know, it comes with a chip on its shoulder, you know. You know what I'm talking about, this kind of mind? This terribly sad kind of mind, because it can't go anywhere. And of course, you know, the whole, as we make our, you know, when we enter the Gompa, when we enter the meditation hall, we make our prostrations or our offering of homage, or however we do that. One of the main psychological purposes of that is to have to cultivate a mind of openness. So there needs to be some humility, because if we're already, you know, the teaching on the pot, whether it's already full, you all know that? Mm-hmm. You know, the three pots, where the pot, if the pot is already full, it already knows everything. Nothing can be added. So there's a kind of humility that the wise student brings, a kind of humility to their listening and to their meditation practice, to their Dharma. And the meditation, the Dharma student can bring some doubt if one is not sure, because it's through that clarifying of doubts that we grow more certain. Okay, so now questions. Any comments, any questions or comments or clarifications on the four opponent powers? This is what I really want us to feel very, I want you to feel like when you go away, that you can do this practice. Yeah.
I have like a comment. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as easy to get to that type of regret.
Yeah.
The healthy regret.
Yeah.
So before I could even conjure that, I had to get over guilt.
Oh, yeah, huh.
And I just asked, what role was I playing when I did that act?
Uh-huh.
And it allowed me to see a pattern.
Uh-huh.
That little role that I play, you know, with that particular action. And
uh-huh.
That was very helpful.
Uh-huh. So it was... So the role helped you see a pattern, and it mm-hmm. felt less personal
right.
and more habitual.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the what you have to do to have it be regret instead of guilt is not be so personally involved in I'm bad. It's the I'm bad thing. I'm bad because I did this bad thing. And, you know, we've been trained... from a young age. I'm sorry, what? This proves that I'm bad, which I deeply suspect. Yes. Now we all know. If I admit this, then that'll definitely prove it. As Dharma, see, this is why emptiness goes hand in hand with our, this is why emptiness can cut this from the root, you see, because it understands that we're not that. It, you know, that helps us not take it personally because we see we don't have some fixed nature. So it's antidoting that very tendency to go to this makes me that way. Exactly. Yeah.
I have a question, and we may have covered this and I missed it, I'm not sure. So the comment this morning about the Dalai Lama speaking to the Tibetans, it's just your karma. Does that mean that we all come into life, we're born with karma? Some
yeah.
Karma?
Yeah, I'm afraid it does.
In the past life? Or?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, perhaps we should. Maybe we haven't really said that. That's right. It's the karma actually impels the rebirth. And yes, we have, they say we have a lot of karma. I mean, if you have kids, this is a confidence in multiple rebirths, which takes a lot of culturing if we're not brought up with it. But the full Buddhist view, world view, is that we are born into this life carrying all of the karma from our past lives. That's right, good and bad. And indeed, the very nature of the life that we're born into has some, has past karmic causes. And we were just talking about we have kind of attraction to a particular kind of rebirth. Of course, as soon as we're born, then we start making new karma, and there's responses then to all of that old stuff. And there's conditions for the ripening of some and not for the ripening of other. So, yeah, we carry a lot of karma that isn't ripened. We have a lot of baggage. In other words, we've got a lot of baggage. They say we've been everything and done everything. They say we've been everything and we've done everything. So one of the things, I didn't teach it this way, but... one of the things you can add to your purification practice, and traditionally it's done that way, is that you, you know, you purify the particular thing you're working with, but you think, and all of those negative karmas that I carry with me from the past that are not yet ripened, may I also purify those? Yes, it does. It works because it gives us confidence, and it gives us courage. As our courage increases, our ability to be transparent increases. Our clinging and rationalization and defensiveness reduces. and our then and when all of that then helps our movement towards seeing things as they really are. Yeah. So, and then, so as we move towards realization and seeing reality in its actual nature, you see that's the thing that's liberating, right? So the purification helps us move towards the liberation. So the purification practice, yeah. It means as we, so as you purify, as you purify all that old stuff, as you purify all of that old stuff, what exactly do I best want to say about this in just a minute or so here?
I'll talk about it tomorrow.
Okay. That's good enough. It's kind of a big topic, but basically the it clears the cobwebs. The psychologically healthy practice of the four opponent powers unburdens us, gives us confidence, and that confidence and ability to be transparent with ourselves, to be more relaxed, that in effect creates the causes, some of the causes and the conditions for the ripening of wisdom, which does indeed cut from the root all of the karmas, even the old ones. And also, this is what I wanted to say. It changes the conditions, you see. It changes the conditions. It creates different conditions. Yeah, so it changes the conditions for the ripening of all those old karmas. So they can't ripen, you see. Because what condition are you changing? You're changing your very mind. You're changing, you're creating a mind of openness, of self-transparency. Yeah, so you're changing the very mental, your mental ecology, which certainly is the most fundamental of conditions for the ripening of old karmas, you see. So the four opponent powers changes everything about yourself as a condition for the ripening of karmas. And remember, we said the four opponent powers isn't the thing that cuts from the root. So it doesn't cut from the root. It changes the conditions so that they don't ripen. And Venerable Dhammadina can say some other more succinct things about that tomorrow. So, then, let us think tonight, may all of our positive energy that we have created today and throughout this week in our practice, may our willingness to just sit down and face our limitations and our karmic baggage, our courage to begin to work with our karmic baggage. May that all ripen in our own increased wisdom and compassion, and may that wisdom and compassion benefit each and every being that we come in contact with. May their increased happiness and peacefulness benefit every being that they come into contact with, and may that benefit radiate out in increasing circles of benefit throughout the universe of beings.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.